Welcome back. And that's a great Tito Puente performing El Cubamachero. Tito Puente was born on this day in 1923, the great Cuban percussionist. Actually fitting, since during our day in history, we found out that this was the day that the Americans and the Cuban exiles botched the Bay of Pigs. So, a little Tito Puente. And also probably good to talk about where we're going now with a conversation about the effects that of the legalization campaign for marijuana in this country. I said earlier, which we'll get into a little bit later in this conversation, that we saw a young man who died in the hospital, Freddie Gray. Some people look at that as just a direct result of the drug war, why the neighborhood was saturated with those police to go after young men in the drug trade, and that is a piece of this. There are people, Michelle Alexander, who is speaking twice here in Baltimore today, once at the Real News at 1 o'clock and then tonight at Goucher College, wrote a long piece about she was glad to see marijuana being legalized, but saying that it's not really going to affect the lives of all the people already have been arrested, most of whom are black and brown in this country, in our prisons and their criminal records, and what it sets up for the future. So, and what this really means, and what this debate, where this is taking us. Clearly, it's all through the country. We are here with, once again, Neil Franklin, retired police major, former Baltimore and Maryland State police officer.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you here. And when he was a state police officer, ran one of the largest single drug raids in the history of the United States, here in Baltimore when they raided the block, and that was under his command. Then he was head of the training academy, police academy here in Baltimore City, and is now executive director of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Lawrence Grand Prix will be joining us in a few minutes. He's Assistant Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. He's on his way in. Will Jones III made it all the way up from D.C. He's chairperson of the D.C.'s Two is Enough D.C., an organization opposed to legalization. Good to have you here for the first time, Will. Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, comment on our Facebook pages, send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. We have three callers coming up, and we'll get to all of you. But let me just start with our guest real fast before we get to the phone. So, Alan and Buddy, we're definitely going to get to your calls as well as to the other calls that are coming in. So, I wonder what the effects of all this will mean to us, you think, in the from both your different analyses of this legalization of marijuana. I mean, it's practically legal, though not yet taxed in Washington, D.C. Right? Am I right about that?
And it can't be bought or sold, so yes.
Right. It can't be bought or sold, right, unlike Colorado and Washington where it can be. But what do you both think the effects of this will be?
Well,
this is Neil Franklin.
And right, it can't be bought or sold, but we know it's being bought and sold. Nothing changes there. It's always been bought and sold. And you're going to have a few people, I think, that will initially – it's a novelty now, and people are going to try to grow their own marijuana. But at the end of the day, they're going to realize that they can't do it as efficiently, and they won't be able to produce the quality of marijuana that's being sold from these professional growers and so on. So they'll abandon their own tomato plants, you know, per se, and they'll continue to buy their marijuana on the illicit market, which means that we're still going to have the problems with the illicit market and the millions being made by organized crime and gangs, and along with that comes the potential for violence and quality control issues, possibly being laced with PCP and other things. Not that that's quite prevalent, but that still exists. So we're still going to have those issues, and I'm still not convinced yet that we're going to see that many successes as it relates to fewer arrests of our young black people. We're still going to have those disparity issues. We still have those disparity issues in Colorado. Now that they've been more
why are people being arrested in Colorado if it's fairly well legal? What do you mean?
Well, you still got open use violations, and even when you look at your civil infractions that come into play here, you still have disparity issues. So you're still going to have, intent to distribute along, in the black market. If you're not participating in the legal market in Colorado, you're breaking the law. So we're still going to see those disparity arrest issues. And the recent data says that still, if you're black, 2.4 times more likely to be arrested in Colorado where they have legal marijuana now.
And Freddie, to me, this is really
Will Jones.
This is really the problem, I think. We're still seeing the disparities. We're still seeing discrimination happening. And so to me, it's so much of a deeper issue than just legalization. We look at the statistics of places like Colorado or Washington that have gone the legalization route, or we look at places that have even decriminalized, and we see that there are still disproportionate arrests. And to me, we're mixing two different issues. One is an issue of law enforcement, racism, racial profiling, discrimination. The other issue is the health implications of having legal recreational industry of marijuana. And to me, the impact on communities of legalization of marijuana is going to be hugely devastating, and it's going to compound problems that we already face with discrimination, which to me are not going to go away magically because marijuana has been legalized.
So it won't go away magically. I think that's correct. Right. But Neil, and then we're going to go to the phones here. Alan, buddy, just hold on 1 second. But let me, this is one of the arguments against legalization, one of the arguments against allowing it to become going to communities that are already affected by poverty and all the other issues that they face will only grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have disparity issues. We've always had that since slavery in law enforcement and blacks. So that's another issue of criminal justice that we need to work on. But look at Colorado. We've had tens of thousands of fewer raw number arrests. Now, who makes up most of those numbers? Black folks do. You know, so even though we have the disparity issues still there in the arrests that are currently being made, we still have thousands of fewer people being saddled with an arrest record for marijuana. And that's a positive step. This is no panacea. Making these changes is no panacea. We have a long way to go. And you know me, Mark, it's not just about marijuana. It's about all of these drugs. It's about the complete war on drugs, again, which is a war on people. It's about us keeping an eye on other policies and laws that are coming down the road. Amy Goodwin just did a piece before your show about the war on terror and how the FBI is going out here targeting people and making their cases and arresting them, basically setting people up. And we know, you know, who these folks tend to be. Muslims. All right. So we have to keep an eye out on policies, tools that are used to further oppression of certain groups of people. And in this conversation right here, black folks. So, yes, it's a couple of different separate issues and arguments. But we always have to work on racism and oppression, and we'll always be working on that. But let's not give, you know, our government any more tools to use in doing this work.
410-319-8888 is the number, unless you want to jump back real well. I do
just
want to get to the phones.
Real quick. Yeah, and I've challenged many people. I would be happy to see statistics that show that the actual number of African Americans in Colorado, Washington State, or places that have decriminalized, the actual, again, bottom line number, is any different, significantly different because of legalization and decriminalization. And what of everything that I found, I've challenged, maybe if there's a study here that Mr. O'Neill can share with us, but I've not seen that. And to me, it's because racism is so much of a deeper issue that we need to be dealing with. But again, to me, it's a different debate, and we should not – mixing the two is doing a disservice to both of the debates. And the real concern with marijuana and legalization is that we're going to see a vast increase in marijuana users and the negative implications that that has. Real quick, our organization is Two is Enough, and that refers to alcohol and tobacco, saying that we already have two recreational legal drugs. And do we want to really add to that with a third recreational drug? With alcohol, there's 136 million people that use it across the nation. With tobacco, there's 69 million people that use it. With marijuana, because there's no legal industry right now, there's just about 19 million people that use it. And even more concerning, the CDC reports that 68% of 12th graders use alcohol, and the American Lung Association reports that 70% of smokers start at age 18 or younger. We can't afford to see the statistics of marijuana rise to match those things.
I'll email you that report, by the way. It's right here.
Appreciate it.
Well, go ahead and talk about that report.
Yeah,
and
well,
respond.
Well,
Lawrence,
here,
welcome. Good to have you with us, man.
So here it is. In Colorado, since 2010, and that's when they started with their medical cannabis, which makes a huge difference. Marijuana possession charges are down by more than 90%. For marijuana cultivation charges, down by 96%. And distribution, down by 99%. Now, if you want to tell me there are no black folks, you know, in those numbers, than something small. It doesn't break it down according to race, but if they're down by that large of a margin, you know, that's a lot of black folks. I've also been in constant contact with the city attorney from Seattle, Pete Holmes, who came here to Maryland to help us work on our policies here during this past session. And when they passed the law, before it even went into effect, he cleared their backlog of cases for marijuana possession, distribution charges by a law. They just cleared the entire docket, and he said a large portion of those cases were black folks.
Seattle has a small black population.
Well, not in King County.
Not in King County. Yeah. Not in King County is a rule. And also, it is black community, but it's also the Mexican community, Mexican-American community.
Absolutely.
The Puerto Rican community, the Native American community. If you look at – because marijuana will remain for a while illegal as a federally, and it's the federal government that patrols Native American reservations – that the numbers of people in the Native population that are in jail for marijuana exceeds percentage-wise any of the population in this country because of the federal laws that take place on that reservation.
Right.
So these are things that are very real. 410-319-8888. Before we turn to Lawrence Graham, I'm glad you're in the studio, man. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. As always, it's great to be here.
Let's go to Alan in Baltimore, line one. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
How are you doing, Jay? Well, there's one positive one positive thing. With marijuana being illegal, I'll be able to buy catnip a whole lot cheaper. However,
go ahead.
However, young black men with dreads who don't smoke pot will not be stopped by cops, and cops won't be able to stop them to frisk them for marijuana. However, they will be stopped for something else. My other question is, if pot becomes illegal in Washington, D.C., and there are like little pot booths, like Wizard of Ounce or whatever, would say an unsuspecting, gullible man like myself were to drive down to D.C. and pick up less than 2 ounces, would I be a criminal and by bringing it across state lines, or would the decriminalization effect take place? So that if I brought an extra $100 with me, I could just pay it off right then.
Thanks, Alan, for the call. Maybe, A, you're still not allowed to sell marijuana in Washington. So that would be illegal to start with. You can't do that.
Right.
But if you cross state lines.
You cross state lines, yes. And especially with that amount, you will be in Maryland. You're looking at under 10 grams for a civil infraction. So, you don't want to do that. You don't want to bring it across state lines, period, anyway. Because then you're looking at federal charges, too.
410-319-8888, as we look at what marijuana legalization on this 420 really means, 420, of course, being the date that people use around marijuana life. 410-319-8888. Buddy, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning, buddy.
First of all, let's be quite honest. We need to decriminalize marijuana. When you look at how many black and brown people are being affected by it legally, and that where their lives are being destroyed. And when we're talking about black men from the ages to 18 to 25, marijuana is maybe the conduit in leading them to selling heavy drugs. Like, you look, I'm born and raised in Baltimore City, born and raised on the west side of town in a community called Sandtown. If you look at the young man, Freddie Gray, that was murdered by the police, they said he ran because he was in a drug area. So therefore, they're assuming that he was selling drugs. They later found a pocket lock knife after they, I guess, searched his dead body. And now they're saying they was arresting him for having a concealed weapon, which is a pocket knife. I work for the Housing Authority. I have a pocket knife right in my pocket right now. So if I'm a criminal. So let's look at the facts and the point of the whole matter. In West Baltimore, the Western District Police Department has been the worst police department for its brutality in the history of Baltimore City. It is well known that they take young black men under the bridge and beat them. If you go back a couple years ago, when they took the young black man's cell phone, took his tennis off, and dropped him off in Howard County. Why is we protecting this man? Here's what I'm confused about. Our black politicians, like I listened to a radio show this morning, a Larry Young show, for 4 hours. He defended the mayor on her capricious policies against the African-American male in West Baltimore. Why isn't no police indicted? We talking about the police bill of rights. They don't have to speak for 10 days. Come on now. Let's be for real. If it was the four of them, the way they do, you put all four of them in separate rooms, then they're going to tell on each other. But by them keeping them not being questioned for 10 days, give them a chance to put their story straight and crucify that young man who was murdered in my community, my beloved community of Sandtown. Thank you very much for listening to me, Lisa.
Buddy, thanks for calling. But let me turn to Lawrence, because you, and I think that this is one of the other issues around this whole question of legalization of drugs and marijuana and more. And he was speaking to it.
Thank you for your great comment, buddy. I work with Leaders of Beautiful Struggle. We were doing advocacy around police brutality and changes to law enforcement bill of rights in Annapolis. So one thing to realize is that with marijuana legalization, you don't legalize all drugs. So there's in theory a possibility for a black market still being there and some police issues still happening, but you do severely decrease those incidences with decriminalization. And I think first is sort of legalization. One thing my organization is really big on is independent black institutions. And though I want to address some of the health concerns probably a little bit later in the show, I do think that if you look at there's a high underreporting of marijuana usage in black communities now because it is illegal. So the legalization rates are probably much higher than we think right now. So it may not be as much of a risk of increasing use as we think there is among youth. But there is a possibility of getting some of these tax revenue and getting some economic opportunities into places like Sandtown. So I think it's very important that we have the tax revenue, if we do legalize marijuana, to go to things like diversionary programs for youth brought into the criminal justice system, to go to things like redevelopment for the communities most hit by the war on drugs like Sandtown. And that's the one thing that can really change those communities is independent black institutions and economic opportunity in historically deprived communities like Sandtown, where my grandmother lives.
So before, I'm going to come right back to you here, Will. I want you to kind of respond to what that last part of what Lawrence was saying. But I'm going to come back to the first part first and then come right back to that. Because we talked about this in the green room. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts. When we look at the death of Freddie Gray, one of the things you said directly was, if there wasn't a drug war, this may never have occurred in the first place.
Absolutely. It's highly likely. I mean, most of what we do out here in cities like Baltimore, from the police perspective, yeah, most of our work is in drug enforcement. You know, we put these teams out there. I think when I was with the police department, I'm sure it's still probably the same. We had a 300-plus man drug unit out there. It's called the Organized Crime Division. They only changed the name of it, but we still have, you know, what's that, one-tenth of the police department completely dedicated to drug enforcement. And just about every patrol officer out there, that's pretty much what they're looking for every day, clearing corners, getting the drug boys off the corners. Then you have drug boys being robbed by, you know, stick-up boys, you know, and you have that violence. And this competition for these corners. And now because of that violence, the police have to come in and do what they do. You know, oh, a drug-selling area is a potentially violent area. So now we have, you know, Mr. Gray being chased down because he's suspected of selling drugs. We do this day after day, hour after hour, in cities all across this country. And if we didn't have this war on drugs, as you will hear Michelle Alexander say, mm-hmm. war on people, if we didn't have it, yes. I mean, would the police still be looking and going after young black males for other things? Yeah, probably so. But I tell you, it wouldn't be anywhere near what we're experiencing today. And as we were walking in this room, I said something else. Me, as a black police officer, it's not really so much a racial thing out there. It's more of me seeing young black men who wear their clothes differently, you know, who wear their hair differently, you know, who happen to be driving a particular car. I'm not a white officer, but I'd see them as a drug dealer. And if they're a drug dealer, they possibly carry a gun, which makes them a violent predator in my community. So that's what I'm looking at, and that's what these police officers are afraid of. And that's why they resort to such force. And don't get me wrong, it's so much more than that, but that's a significant piece of it. Again, all centered around this so-called war on drugs. Let's treat it as a health issue, get the police out of it, and we can end a lot of this craziness that we're experiencing in our neighborhoods and communities and change the perception that not just the police have of our young black men, but that many of us have of our young black men.
Will, go ahead.
I can't agree more that we need to remove these criminal penalties that, you know, people would be incarcerated for smoking a joint. No one with in our organization. And I think most people opposed to legalization would not argue that people should be thrown in jail for smoking a joint or something. What we're really opposed to is the industry that comes in with marijuana legalization. I think we have to separate two things: decriminalization and full legalization. Decriminalization removes the criminal penalties for possessing marijuana. Legalization's going to allow basically a new Budweiser, a new tobacco industry, basically, except with marijuana. And I tell people, we see the Budweiser ads in the Super Bowl. These are huge industries with unlimited resources, and we can't afford to have that type of industry behind marijuana as well. The most effective drug dealer is not the guy on the street. It's the corporate industry. And that, I think there's a huge difference between decriminalization and full legalization with sales in stores in Denver and places in California.
You could do with legalization of marijuana what people did with tobacco, which is to ban that advertising, not allow that advertising on television, not allow that advertising in communities. As a matter of fact, some people would argue that you should do that with alcohol anyway, that those kind of advertising should be banned. If people want to buy a beer, want to buy whiskey, want to buy marijuana, want to buy whatever they want to buy, tobacco, then they have a right to do that. But maybe the advertising is part of what you don't allow. And then you also have the question that Lawrence talked about earlier, which is the revenue that comes in taxes for the legalization of things like marijuana.
Well, but tobacco is far more addictive than marijuana is. And over the past couple of decades, we've had a 40% increase or decrease in use because of those things, because of how we look at advertisement and the changes we made, because of education, because of treatment, because of social influence. You know, you can't smoke in this building. You know, when it's 2 feet of snow outside, you got to go outside and smoke. You're not going to smoke in my home. So we make people feel a little, you know, ostracized. And that's how we reduce use. We could do the same thing with marijuana.
But at what cost? With this supposed regulation of alcohol and their advertisements in for tobacco, again, 70% of smokers start at age 18 or younger. That's according to the American Lung Association. If you walk through cities, the minority communities have more of the liquor stores and tobacco advertisements in there, whatever regulation we've passed. For every $1 brought in through revenue for taxes on alcohol or tobacco, $10 is spent on societal costs. So a lot of these things sound good in theory, but when the rubber hits the road, especially with a huge corporation that has billions, you know, at its fingertips, it's going to devastate minority communities. It's going to devastate young people. Again, we have 20.
Nothing devastates a minority community more than our criminal justice system, these prohibition policies that we currently have, where we're putting thousands upon thousands of our young people in prison. As we sit here, we're locking up our young people for these so-called drug charges. When you send one of our people to prison, you're sending the entire family to prison. The black family unit has been decimated, not by drug use and abuse, but by our criminal justice system and incarceration.
On the way to the phone, say, Lawrence,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Very quickly, it's a complicated issue. One of my frustrations is we're throwing around a lot of data, but there really isn't much hard data on things like legalization. We're still getting the data in from places like Colorado and Washington. So I'm not sure that the 1 to 10 tax dollar ratio can really be seen as true right now, especially considering tobacco is still a serious issue. So one thing that I want to address is, again, I live near on the west side. I've grown up in Baltimore my whole life. I really believe that we are severely underreporting the amounts that use marijuana,
yep,
because it is a serious health issue. But if it's already occurring, then the question is, can we produce a framework where you no longer have to keep that secret for fear of going to jail?
Mm-hmm.
You can actually talk about the fact that, you know, mm-hmm, maybe you're young and you smoke weed. And again, if we have a social movement that demands those tax revenues be used effectively for things like addiction treatment, for things like rehabilitation, for things like diversionary programs, then that social movement that can force legalization to be accountable to the people who've been most hurt by, you know, drug use and the war on drugs can then actually serve some socially productive use.
Let me just jump back to the phones here and at least get one call in before we go to break and get the other calls coming in after break. Clarence and Thomas, you're the first two callers up. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts? Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. You know, I was just passing the police headquarters, and it seems they've got like 100 police officers surrounding the building. So
you know, just a note. But I don't think...
Because the demonstration's coming up around Freddie Gray's death?
Yes, I think it is, sir.
Yeah.
I don't think the legalization of marijuana is going to change anything in relationship to the way the society and the court system looks at black youth. That's a misnomer. What I'm more curious about right now is the push for this. Black folks are pushing the issue about the incarceration and criminal records of black youth, but there's also something else going on behind the scenes. Who's going to profit from this? I see corporate America already in my head making deals with people in Mexico, like heads of cartels, for the importation of it once it takes hold all across America. And who's going to profit from that? Black youth will still be targeted by the police, and corporate America will make a windfall out of it. I see these connections happening right behind the scenes already in my head. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Well, it's not just in your head. I mean, it's real. I mean, you're seeing that. That's one of the things Michelle Alexander has written about, she'll be speaking about, which is she's favors legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. But she says that, which we'll talk about after the break, but she sees the profits going to white entrepreneurs in Colorado and Washington State. And also, what about all the lives have already been ruined by their arrests? What happens to these kids? What happens to these young people? How do we represent, how do we take care of that in with legalization or decriminalization? So, I mean, those are very real issues.
Yeah.
So quick comments before we go to break here.
I think D.C. is an excellent example of the much deeper problem. D.C., we passed legislation that would allow you to seal – before we fully legalized, we passed legislation that would allow you to seal your records if you had a previous arrest for marijuana use. We decriminalized. We had medical marijuana. Despite that, the rush for full legalization has continued forward, and that's, again, because of the money. And I think we have to recognize, again, decriminalization and full legalization are two different issues. And that's what we've been pushing over and over again, that we don't have to allow the industry in while removing criminal penalties.
We have to take a quick break. We're coming back. When we come back, we're going to come back to our other two guests. Also to Thomas and Haverty Grace, you're our next caller up. So please hold on as we go through the news break here and come right back. 410-319-8888. And we're going to break with Stephen Marley, Someone to Love. Stephen Marley was born on this day in 1972. We'll be right back.
Till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes, all the words past the margin. The whole of mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable, smooth issue that murderers move with.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Nas. It's on, and we're this from Whose World Is This? From his album Illmatic, released on this day in 1994. We are here with our three guests talking about the legalization of marijuana, its effect on our communities. The issues not being raised by everybody around these issues. We're joined by retired Major Neil Franklin, both former city and Maryland State Police officer, now executive director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Lawrence Grand Prix, assistant director of research and public policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, Will Jones III, chairperson of TIE DC, Two is Enough DC, an organization opposed to legalization. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's get this call in here and get this viewpoint, then come back and wrestle all these things for the next half an hour together. 410-319-8888. Please join us here. Thomas and Haverty Grace, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Very well, Thomas. Welcome.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show, and I like your show. Now, I want to say a couple of things, and I'm going to be very brief because I've been waiting and I'm at work. Number one, I go to Peru, Lima, Peru, in South America, one of the countries that grows cocaine and heroin, one of the major importers to the United States. And they don't have a cocaine problem. You can buy coca tea in the store. You can buy coca anything, and they don't have a problem. You know what, Mark? They don't even have a drug problem. They chew coca leaves. Okay, marijuana. I don't know what the deal is about legalizing marijuana. I see more drunks than I see people high off a joint. You know, the money is like this. If you legalize marijuana, that police officer that you have there probably wouldn't have a job because, number one, you wouldn't need him.
He's retired.
With his racial profile, and he can go. All right? Now, if you make the laws, then you can have marijuana. The people that make the laws control the marijuana. So if you don't want marijuana in your neighborhood, go vote. Vote in the people that's going to change the laws. That's the way I look at it. Now, I don't see any problem legalizing, like I say, but put responsible people in office. Not Stephanie Rowlands Blake or whatever her name is, or that police commissioner. That's sending back to wherever he come from. Get rid of that. Put qualified people in these offices. Get qualified police officers, not the racial profiling type like you have on your show today. We just set up and profiled a young black man. I got stopped in Baltimore City. You know why they stopped me, Mark? Because I was wearing my hat backwards. So then I also walked up to me and said, oh, I made a mistake. Of course, I'm over 50. So now he made a mistake. But I was pulled over before wearing my hat backwards. But if you put qualified people in office, you can change a lot of the problems. The school system, marijuana is not going to be a problem because you're going to make enough money to pay people to do a decent job. You have a wonderful day. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Thomas. So let's talk about the effects of this legalization, the way we're talking about it. One of the things that came up before we went to break, and Chris, we're going to get you a call after we jump into this bit here from the West Side, that Michelle Alexander has raised the issue of saying she's for legalization, but the issue she raises is who profits from the legalization and who doesn't profit. What happens to the lives that have already been affected because they have criminal records and have been arrested? What happens to the thousands of cases that are pending? What happens to those young men now on probation and parole? Those are some of the issues. And she talks about, do we need reparations as a way of thinking about how we use the money from marijuana to help the communities that are the most devastated by it? So let's wrestle with that. This is what you don't hear in most marijuana legalization conversations.
Mm-hmm. So first, you know, I think people need to realize just how large the current economy is in marijuana that is in our communities, paying rent, paying food, putting food on the table, you know, buying clothes, paying heating bills. It's paying a lot of bills within our community. So when we move to a place of legalization, we will be looking at that economy leaving the black community. Okay, yeah, it's an illicit economy, but it does exist. It is there. Now, the problem is, as legislation is being crafted around the country, there are some problems. Number one, fees don't tend to be reasonable so that anyone can enter into the new industry. It locks out certain communities. It locks out blacks. It locks out poor folk because the fees are extremely high, like what we're seeing here in Maryland, where you're going to need somewhere around $250,000 to play if we move to legalization, just in fees alone. Then you've got criminal records. Now, unfortunately, the communities that have been devastated the most, you know, the community is the black community, and the many criminal records that we have for. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm talking about low-level distribution. I'm talking about possession. We can't lock these people out of the emerging industry. So our legislators, and that's why we've gone to the Black Caucus here in the state of Maryland, saying you have to lead on this issue. You have to be the ones designing and crafting the policy going forward to make sure that everyone can play. Mainly the black community that has caught the brunt of these prohibition policies and enforcement by our law enforcement folks. The other thing is, and I'll end with this, is that black enterprise needs to take a serious look at this and become part of entering into this new industry, figuring out how they can prop up the black community by using the money that they have, our current black businesses, and investing in this business, number one, to make sure that it's done right. Again, with our legislative folks, you know, and the citizens need to lobby our legislative folks to make sure that we don't open up a ton of marijuana outlets within the black community. We can control that from the beginning, but we have to be engaged to do this. And the more we push back and resist, on legalization coming forward. Before we know it, it's going to happen. And we've been so busy pushing back at it and fighting it, it's going to happen right in front of our eyes, and we're not going to be a part of it. And I thank Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. That's the kind of things, this is something that they keep a close eye on and watchful eye on, and they're engaged. And we need more organizations like yours to do this work.
Thank you. I'll be very brief.
Then we'll go to Will.
Not in favor of legalization for the sake of legalization. I'm in favor of legalization as an extension of a social movement that addresses larger issues of racism and white supremacy. So with that, you're looking at things like the legacy of slavery, African Americans having less access to capital to do things like start businesses. That's especially hard because we still have a federal ban on marijuana. So this is hard. But what we as a group, LBS, says is that legislation, laws, are just a language we use to govern ourselves. We as people need to be less intimidated about that process and get into it, because we can write a good bill that forces them to do things like put that money back into job training for these communities. Do things like, if you have outlets in the community, require local hiring. Do things like attach shielding for criminal records. And it's kind of weird, because if you have experience with marijuana, that would seem to make you better for the job and not disqualify for the job. So we need to have a new way of thinking around these issues. But again, we as a black community can get into respectability politics and not want to talk about these issues. But it's a reality, and we can either deal with it ourselves or have it thrust upon us. Can't agree more with Neil there.
Will.
I want to say, before I get into this again, criminal penalties for marijuana use are something that should be removed. And I'm not advocating, that people go to jail for marijuana use or something like this. But again, we have to distinguish between full legalization. And to me, whether the person's black, white, purple, green, orange, it's irresponsible to have an industry that's going to make money off of addicts. Marijuana is an addictive recreational drug like tobacco and alcohol. When we look at the statistics for these supposedly regulated drugs, again, I'll repeat, the CDC says that 68% of 12th graders use alcohol. The American Lung Association reports that 70% of smokers start at age 18 or younger. That's exactly, unfortunately, what we're going to see again with marijuana, that, yes, you won't be able to buy it in a store, but the total increase of youth users of marijuana is going to vastly increase in. Marijuana is not simply an innocuous drug. Top universities, the Lancet Psychiatry Journal, Harvard Medical School, is showing that marijuana use can lead to an 8-point drop in IQ loss. It can lead to significant.
That's really been a challenge. I have to stop right there, just because I've been doing tons of research in the last 20-odd years on this issue.
Right.
There's no medical evidence that marijuana leads to stopping brain activity or lessening your intelligence. I mean, that just does not exist.
To say no is pushed. There's debate about it.
There's not much debate about it. Those articles in Lancet, the guy was pilloried. He was discredited when he wrote this. He had to take back and apologize. They won't let him write in Lancet anymore. I mean, that was just not true. It was not true when he wrote it, and it's not true now. I mean, I can pull the article up, because that came up on the show last time we did this program, and that was just – and I pulled the article up and read the Lancet editors who had discredited this guy, said he only used 12 people in his study. He lied about his criteria. I mean, that is not true. It's just not true.
We can debate the Lancet. I'm talking about the one that just came out last year, but I'm also talking about ones from the American Psychological Association that met in D.C. In August, that said that, again, it leads to significant neurocognitive damage. Different things from top medical associations.
There will always be
a debate about this, but one thing everyone agrees, it is an addictive recreational drug. For youth, it's 1 in 6 chance that you'll be addicted. And so do we want to see that introduced again? Do we want anyone making money off of an industry like this?
I think Mr. DeBray, I think you said it, man. We really don't realize just how many people are using weed. And don't get me wrong. I don't want young people to use weed. I don't want people to drink what I'm drinking right now, which is coffee. There's a lot of things that I don't want our young people to do. But they do, because we try to push this stuff underground and keep it away from them in secret and everything. Educate them on what things do to you, like they do in Portugal. Twice a year, they send a medical practitioner into the schools to teach about all of these drugs, and they teach them the truth about these drugs. Now, over the past 12 years, they've had a 22% to 25% decrease in overall drug use by these middle and high school kids in Portugal, because they're not doing this fear factor thing. It's about truth. And when you give young people good information, you know what, and honest information, by and large, they're going to make good decisions. Now, when you look at the marijuana use rates in these states that have had prominent use of marijuana, like California with their medical marijuana situation, and Colorado and other states, it's stagnant. It has been it has remained stagnant, going up or down over the past few years among our youth in these states. So there's no data that indicates we've got these increases.
I get to like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
We live in a world of
Of course,
we live in a world of information overload. We have stats flying back and forth. We coach debate. And so one thing we like to do is try to parse out some of these stats. First, the data is hard to know because, again, marijuana is illegal, so a lot of the studies have small sample sizes and are hard to understand. But the best preponderance of the data seems to say that marijuana is less addictive than tobacco and no more harmful than alcohol, probably much less harmful than alcohol. You hear about memory loss. Well, you can get memory loss from alcohol or a low-fat diet. You talk about addiction. A very small percentage of people who smoke marijuana have problems, but nowhere near the levels of tobacco, and they tend to decrease over time. So the fact of the matter is that we have three industries already that profit from these sort of addictive realities: alcohol, tobacco, and gambling. And it's funny that we have so much concern over marijuana, but we don't look at the three things that are already legal. We need to not be afraid of the data, recognize it's complex, but realize the reality is marijuana just is what it is. And a lot of people think that's more like caffeine than the Schedule I drugs like heroin that's currently grouped with the federal law. And last thing I'll say is that if you have it illegal, you're more likely to use it as a gateway drug because you're illicit marijuana dealer could also be dealing other illicit drugs. So if you legalize it, you decrease the possibility of it coming marijuana users coming into contact with other hard drugs, and you decrease the gateway factor. We just need to not be afraid of the science and the debate. I think it's pretty clear.
So let me know the phone. We'll come right back and let you jump right back in. 410-319-8888. Chris, on the west side, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Mark, and good morning to you and your guests. I want to say I'm frustrated with this discussion because this was a discussion that overrode the original discussion. The original discussion was not about weed. In the black community, there's never been an issue with getting weed or smoking weed. Never. I don't say this as someone who studied it or ACLU statistics. I've been in the community, and I've been around this stuff, and the original discussion was about the disparity in treatment between and sentencing between powdered and crack cocaine. That's when we started really looking at this issue. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this move to legalize marijuana. Now, I'm for the legalization of marijuana, first and foremost. But again, we're talking about Michelle Alexander being in Baltimore today and the passing of Freddie Gray just yesterday. And we have to get to the heart of what's going on in communities, how some communities are able to be treated differently than others, and how to do that, you have to paint certain people as the enemy in Ferguson, as monsters, as felons, and other things.
Yeah.
So the language is still the same, the results are still the same, but all of a sudden we're having this new conversation that is not changing the dynamic.
Well, I agree with what you say, Chris, and let our guest comment on that. I mean, I think marijuana legalization is not new. I think it's been around for a long time.
Right.
A long, long time. The debate over this is from back in, as old as I am, from back in the 60s. It was a debate before crack cocaine ever even existed. But I think that the drug war is something that has caused the mass incarceration of people of color in this country. And an interesting statistic I came up with yesterday was that the percentage of people white and black who were incarcerated before the mid-60s was pretty even, which is really counterintuitive but real. It's the drug war that has sent masses of people to prison, and I think that is real. I mean, that,
absolutely.
I was shocked by that stat when I read about the stats of imprisonment for pre-1965. I was really shocked.
Absolutely.
But I didn't expect to find that at all.
I mean, and that's where it began. I mean, if you go back into the 1970s, before Richard Nixon announced the so-called war on drugs, we had about 419,000 people in all of our prisons for all drug crimes. If you look at all our drug crimes, 419,000. By 2005, that number had grown to close to 2 million. So, I mean, it's the overall drug war that this is about. And, again, it's not a panacea as we try to roll back these policies.
There are no panaceas.
We still got some huge criminal justice issues with reform to deal with and police reform and so on. But the foundation of it, again, and a major part of the foundation is the war on drugs, which is a war on people.
And to me, these are, again, two different debates that must be had. But, and I'm going to go off the title of Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, to highlight my point. There were Jim Crow laws that discriminated against us as African Americans. Yet when those Jim Crow laws were removed, we see there has been a new Jim Crow. If we remove marijuana, there will be another new Jim Crow unless we deal with the deeper chronic race issues that are plaguing our nation. And so to me, these are two debates that must be had, but mixing the two is doing a disservice to both, because I think we're not properly looking at the science behind the marijuana industry and marijuana users, especially those that are younger. When you're older, again, there's different statistics when you're younger, when you're older. And to me, these are two separate debates that must be had on their own merits. We need to deal with the chronic race issues, but it seems like legalization is a convenient excuse for politicians to get more revenue and tax to make it seem like they're doing something for everyone that's unhappy about stuff. And so they're saying, here, let's legalize. We're dealing with some of the race issues. We get some money, too. And we're not having a responsible debate on the health and marijuana. And we're not truly dealing with the chronic issues in our criminal justice system.
Yeah, I get it. But let's not forget the foundation of the drug war is a race issue. It is a social control issue if you really want to go back 100 years.
Yeah. And I actually agree with a lot of what was just said. I don't think it's an either-or issue, though. If
right.
you look at the history of marijuana prohibition, you see that people were concerned about Mexican immigrants, and it was a very racialized prohibition, but not just Mexican, West Indies immigrants who are often black. So the idea of the drug-addled black person is foundational to this discussion, and if we begin to have that conversation, we can break that apart. Now, again, if we legalize marijuana and that money goes to schools in Montgomery County, I think that we as a city have probably failed, because it's places like Baltimore and PG that have dealt with the brunt of the drug war, and I'm interested in marijuana legalization because it's one of the cleanest and clearest opportunities to force some of these resources back into the community. Every time we talk about alternative programming for young people, every time we talk about money for the community, they say we don't have the money. Well, here is some money. It's clearly related to a history of oppression, and I'm saying that people need to make this part of the larger social movement around addressing racism and white supremacy to demand this money be redirected back into the communities. We can save ourselves. We can programming that address these issues. We can do it ourselves in our communities. We just need the resources, and here are some resources.
I mean, if you look at what we've done with casinos in the state of Maryland or other places, that money has not gone into the communities as they promised or anything else,
right?
It just hasn't. So now they even have a private. The city police have now put in a new substation. It's costing millions of dollars at the casino to ensure people are safe when they're gambling. So, I mean, it's you know, so what you're saying, it maybe has a lot of merit, Lawrence, but it also has not happened yet.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And anything else that we've done.
Exactly. And I think these are unique times that require for unique forms of thinking. And that's why we're so important about having tangible demands. That's like, if you do the bill this way, I can do this size community garden that puts this many people employed and keeps this many kids out of the criminal justice system. And if you show the people a tangible result to a policy outcome, we're hoping that that increases the input and increases the level of ability to move some of those people who are right now really into protesting and things like social media to get them to Annapolis. Because once you go to Annapolis, I think that you really see some of those power dynamics and you understand that's really a fight to be had to get really your resources as a black community, because they're right there. You just have to be willing to go there and demand them.
Now, I'll tell you, Let me
come right back to you, Will.
Yeah, I just want to point out that marijuana laws are not intrinsically racist. In America, they have been, but most countries across the world have laws against marijuana use, including black countries. Nelson Mandela was one that was opposed to drug use. And so we have to realize that though America has used the war on drugs to target minorities, intrinsically there's something more to it than just race, because, again, countries across the world have laws against marijuana use. And I'm saying this is the debate that needs to be had about marijuana use. And we have to understand that it's been clouded here in the U.S. because it has been used as a tool of racism, as a tool of oppression. But there's something more to, again, we have to debate marijuana on its own merit and not mix the two issues.
Now, I just want to comment quickly on what Lawrence was saying about what we need to do. And one of the things I see different here in Maryland as opposed to other states that have moved forward or are attempting to move forward with policy legislation and for marijuana legalization, here in Maryland, I do see a lot of work down in Annapolis from different community groups and organizations. We formed a very good coalition here in Maryland to pay attention to those things that should be in the legislation to make sure that money is going or hopefully will go to where it's needed. And some of the examples that Lawrence gave. You know, our young people, like with Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle and some other organizations here in the city, have been very instrumental in making things happen or not happen, such as the youth jail that these guys prevented from being built. Engagement at the legislative level is key, and I think we're starting to do that here in Maryland as it relates to these reforms, but I'd like to see it in other states across the country as well.
We'll see where this debate goes here. I mean, I think that the legalization in terms of consumption and ownership in D.C. could change the nature of the debate in the state of Maryland and go beyond. I'd be curious to where this takes us here in the state of Maryland because of that. I said earlier when you look at the effect that it might have on the D.C. suburb legislators, Charles County, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, that this could have an effect on the legislation here in Maryland, I think, in the next couple of years that might move the legalization debate even further. And I think that as that debate occurs, what Lawrence is raising are the kind of things that have to be in the debate or it's not worth having it. Well, it is worth having it, but you can't have it without that. Let me put it in that sense.
Shouldn't have it without it.
Should not have it without that. I want to thank the three of you very much for being on this program today. Will Jones III from Two Is Enough D.C. Thank you so much for driving all the way up from D.C. today. It really meant a lot to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Lawrence Grand Prix, Assistant Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Always great to see you.
Thank you. Can I get 10 seconds? We have an event on Thursday. Our argument for using marijuana legalization as a tool for reparations on the war on drugs. It will be downtown at the Real News Network. You can find us on lbsbaltimore.com for the details.
Very good. And Neil Franklin, Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, always great to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Mark.
I want to remind you all as a way to break. Join us this Thursday at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church as the Mark Steiner Show and the Baltimore Food and Faith Project of the Center for a Livable Future present the film Homecoming. It's the history of African-American farmers and about where the future is going, why it disappeared, and where we can go. And after the film, I'll be moderating a discussion that includes the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, Alea Frazier, Joanne Cusar, and Lavette Blue. So join us this Thursday night, 7 p.m., Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, 430 East Belvedere Avenue. That's right by Belvedere in York. For the film and discussion, we'll be taping for later airing on The Mark Steiner Show. And we are going to break here very quick with Always and Forever, Luther Vandross. We lost him too early. He was born on this day in 1951. Sunshine.